And now it's time for Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas, a local discussion focused on systemic racism, injustice, and hate in our country. Although we may not always agree, the aim of Inside Voices is to confront these truths together by sharing the voices of those facing these struggles and to find a path to making things better. We invite you to listen to this ongoing conversation. And now, here's Kevin.
Welcome, people of all races, nationalities, religions, cultures. This is another episode of Inside Voices. I'm your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening on 97.9 The Hill. And we're doing it a little different this week. We're going to do editorial style. It's just me and you having this conversation. And we're going to touch on the subject that has also inserted itself into this conversation on racial justice and inequality and what is systemic and what in our environment, what in our daily lives that we go about kind of unbeknownst to the racial undertones or the feeling or the energy that is present due to some historical landmarks. Let's just say it, like the rebel flags, the Confederate monuments, the buildings named after people that were former Klan members or people that were, you know, keeping racial injustice as a part of the law and order of how black men and women were regulated in our state as far as their rights and voting and rights to education and things like that. And so we have had an awakening on that level as well, nationally, to how many of these monuments and how many of these buildings are named after people that might not have shared, well, not even might not, definitely didn't share the ideas of what we are trying to move forward towards as an all-inclusive America that embraces everyone in their diversity. And we have people that, you know, are a part of our history. We can't remove that, but that their perspective on we the people was much different than I think what we carry now as Americans and what we want to see for all citizens of this country. And so when we break this conversation down, I can't help but bring it right to the local, because in recent, you know, recent history here in Chapel Hill, we have had our own moments of coming to terms with, are we going to be tied to our past or are we going to find a way to move forward that includes everyone, and when I say includes, allows for them to feel present in the same academic setting as their other, you know, white counterparts, and without feeling like there is a symbol of longstanding historical systemic oppression that is state-funded and school-sponsored, present on their academic buildings and in their courtyard as a symbol of, you know, what would welcome someone to the university when we talk about Silent Sam. And so, and right out the gate right now, so the UNC panel just voted to remove the names from four campus buildings tied to white supremacy. A UNC Chapel Hill panel focusing on issues of race and history voted Friday to recommend changing the names of four prominent campus buildings because of ties to white supremacy: the Daniels Building, the Carr Building, Ruffin Residence Hall, and Acock Residence Hall are all named after men who used their positions to impose and maintain violent systems of racial subjugation. And this is, you know, coming from the News and Observer and UNC history professor Jim Ledoulis. He is the co-chair of the university's Commission on History, Race, and a Way Forward. Okay, so this request will now go to Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz, who can forward the request on to the UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees. Okay, and so the full board met on Thursday and will likely discuss a new policy and process for renaming buildings on campus, because that was after this June that the UNC board lifted a 16-year moratorium on the renaming of the buildings and historical places on campus, particularly those tied to a racist history. Okay, so this is all, you know, coming right to terms in our own backyard here in Chapel Hill. You know, when I first came to this university, you are kind of introduced to the concept of UNC through the basketball and tradition and things surrounding that. You know, it's the blue heaven. It's the prettiest place on earth. And, you know, as an African-American student, it represents, you know, especially I was coming from a small town, it represented the opportunity to get to a place, an academic setting around, you know, people from all over the world that were, you know, in business and education and just, you knew if you could get here and network with the type of people that came to this university, that it would no doubt help advance your cause and present opportunity. But, you know, I think that the part that people, you know, people of color have to understand is part of that history. There's a beautiful school, it's a beautiful legacy, that has created a lot of opportunity for myself and others, but you do have to come to terms with the history of the university. You know, there are elements of the Confederacy throughout it. The, you know, where Tar Heels comes from, right? You know, Confederate soldiers walking without shoes, leaving footprints, you know? To know that Silent Sam was dedicated by the Daughters of the Confederacy. And, you know, if you know that speech, it was dedicated with, you know, not even 100 yards from here, a Negro wench was whipped. And that was part of it. And when we get down to the names of the buildings that students attend, people tied to obvious systemic racism in the past at a time and an era where it was acceptable, that the earliest students of Carolina, that some of them were, you know, Confederate soldiers and members of the Confederacy. And so there is that thread of history that is present in UNC. And if you're going to go to the college, if you're going to go to Carolina, like I said, it's just something that you have to come to terms with. Don't get there and be surprised, and then have it devalue your education. I'll say that if you're going to go to UNC, you need to know that history. And I think that's what we're talking about now, right? Is can I be present? Can I move forward in a way that represents the full diversity of what we say we want to be? And I think that's what we're getting to now, is what kind of Carolina we want to be moving forward. And why were all these monuments here to begin with? I think a lot of people also have the misunderstanding that that these monuments and that these things were put here long ago, and they represent this long history and tradition that goes all the way back to the Civil War. But a lot of these statues were not put here. They've been here, you know, they were put here in recent times, in the 70s, in the 60s. And we'll get back into that. We'll talk about what, you know, the actual legacy of the Confederacy in these monuments, what it means. And we'll continue to unpack these things. You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas right here on 97.9 The Hill.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. It's your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening right here on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. And we are talking about Confederate monuments, rebel flags, the namings of these buildings, and what that means in 2020 as, you know, we have this awakening and awareness of things that are just racially insensitive and that are tied to a history and a past that make people of color feel like, oh, you're trying to send me a message that speaks of oppression, one that speaks of the white supremacy, is what a lot of these statues and monuments and the flags represent, right? And so a couple things come to mind when I think about, you know, as a black male and being in the South and what I've come across, you know, and I think about my earliest encounter with the rebel flag when I was a kid. It's probably like 7 years old, 6, 7 years old, 8 years old. And I absolutely loved the Dukes of Hazzard. absolutely loved the Dukes of Hazzard. I thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life. My big wheel was because I loved Cars and Evel Knievel as well. So, like, you know, I was a stunt kid. I wanted to do the tricks and ride bikes and big, you know, flip upside down and jump over cars. So my big wheel was Dukes of Hazzard. I had, you know, I wanted my lunchbox Dukes of Hazzard. I wanted my backpack Dukes of Hazzard. And so I had, you know, I think my parents at the time saw it as harmless because it was Dukes of Hazzard stuff, but with the rebel flag all over it, all over my big wheel and my trapper keeper and all of that, I thought it was the Dukes of Hazzard logo, right? And so I went to school one day and I had drawn this rebel flag on my book bag. And my teacher, Miss Short, saw it. That was Miss Hollins, excuse me. My teacher, Miss Hollins, saw it and asked me, you know, why that was on my book bag. And I said, it's the Dukes of Hazzard. And she was like, no, baby, it's not. And she took a black magic marker, a permanent marker, and she scribbled all over it on my book bag where I had drawn it. And I did not understand that at that time. I was a kid and I was like, why is she hating on that, you know? And it wouldn't be until much later, until I'm in like the fifth grade, you know, where we start even getting into the context of Civil War and what that flag meant or any of that. But I was totally clueless about it. I thought that it was, like I said, the Dukes of Hazzard logo. And so, you know, you grow up with that element of it. And then you grow up, you know, like I grew up in Northern Virginia and a big part of North Carolina. So, you know, Robert E. Lee schools named after Robert E. Lee, things named after Stonewall Jackson, the magnet schools named after Jefferson Davis. I went to Mills E. Godwin Middle School. You know, our logo for the school is like a plantation owner, like holding a cane. You know, that was our mascot. You know, I just think about all these things that, you know, there are all these names and different monuments and things that I've seen through the past. And then, you know, I start discovering Stone Mountain, Georgia. And then even with Silent Sam, when you come to Carolina, you know, it's made to be cute, right? That, oh, well, what's Silent Sam represent? Oh, that's the first, you know, Confederate soldier. But if a virgin walks by, he'll shoot his gun. Legend has it, if a virgin walks by, he'll shoot his gun. And, you know, and that takes the sting out of it somehow, or that makes it, you know, less Confederate, you know, that we laughing about it now, or that there's a joke made about it. And I think that that's what we try to do. We try to desensitize stuff. Oh, it's just the Dukes of Hazzard, or, oh, it's just Silent Sam, or, oh, man, it's just a name on a building or whatever. But what's the message? What's the message that you're sending? Because you named it for a reason. You put the statue there for a reason, right? We're still waving a flag of a defeated movement that was treasonous, that was against the United States government, and that, as much as people would want to argue states' rights, I would argue those states' rights were the right to own slaves, the right to own people, right? So even if, you know, and I understand that some people will look and say, this is my heritage. This is my great, great, great this, or my great, great that. And they were sticking up for what they believed in, and they fought to the death, and they believed these things. And more than one thing can be true. They can have fought for what they believed, and you could not have to deny your history and heritage, but you need to look at it in context, and we need to evaluate it in context, because building monuments up for it and revering it as some great moment in history that was some lost ideal that should somehow be revisited, that was the right way and we got it wrong doing it this way, it's disrespectful, it's hateful, it doesn't account for the black men and women and people of color that have contributed to what is the fabric of the rest of this history of this country, the people that helped build it, and their contribution to what, you know, is now considered to be America and what's always been considered to be America, is that every, you know, every hand was involved. And so to keep this ideal of white supremacy exalted, to keep it put in place, to keep it up on high, where it is the gateway to your education, the gateway to your bank, the gateway to your city, the gateway to your courthouse, to your, you know, so to the front door of your legal system. What is it? What is the message that's being sent by all of these monuments that represent a defeated traitor movement that lasted 4 or 5 years? And we continue to commemorate it throughout our country to keep it in place, to keep the ideal and the energy in place. And you would think that, you know, these statues were put up like right after the Civil War, which Robert E. Lee expressed himself that he'd wish that we would not commemorate any part of this Confederacy so we could move on from it, because he knew it was going to be a sore spot. And he didn't want any, he didn't feel that it was relevant to put up any monuments commemorating any of these things, because it was a war he wished it wouldn't, had never had to happen. It was brother against brother, right? And so why were these statues put up? You know, Civil Rights Act, Civil Rights era, you want to talk about, when we're talking about, is racism real? And Dr. King and, you know, John Lewis, RIP, who just passed here, good trouble, Mr. John Lewis. You know, both of those men fought hard to continue to lead and bring energy to a movement that would bring forth some type of civil rights and racial equality for Black men and women in their era, and had an ally in, you know, and President Kennedy, and a lot of other people in the movement, allies in the struggle. And all those people, you know, were either beaten or lost their lives for that energy. But it, you know, it saw itself to an end, right? We have the Civil Rights Act, 63, 64, 65, things begin to change. Well, around that same time, these monuments begin to start appearing all over cities in America. And if you go back and you do your research and you look, and you'll see that that is when the majority of these monuments were put in place in response to the rights that Black men and women were beginning to have in response to the Civil Rights Act and the Civil Rights Movement. These statues were put in place as a reminder that, yeah, you can vote or you feel like you have these rights, but don't forget who runs it. The names on the building. Yeah, you can come in here and you can walk in this thing, but you walking by the, you know, a person that was Klan, whose family built this, you know, paid for this building and owns it. It's the reminder, it's the subliminal reminder of white supremacy put in place all over our country. And so get down to the fact why these statues are here and what type of university do we want to be moving forward, right? And it took Carol Folt putting her job on the line. Margaret Spellings resigned, and for the statues to come down. And so now we're, you know, taking the names off the buildings. And so, yeah, we need to come to terms with what type of university and what type of town and what type of energy we want moving forward. Because never in my life would I thought that I would have ever seen rebel flags and people representing Nazi and KKK sentiments anywhere near Chapel Hill. So I know that that is the furthest energy from the people of this town and this area that truly represent it. And so, yeah, I guess it's time that we come to terms with who we've been, who we are now, and who we want to be. We'll be right back on 97.9 The Hill. This is Inside Voices with your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. Be right back.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. Four letters. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. This is your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening on 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro Radio. We've been having this ongoing conversation about Confederate flags, Confederate monuments, and their removal. And yeah, it's happening. It's the next part of the conversation as we unravel what in our society is systemic and what needs to go and what needs to change so that people can feel comfortable in their environment without feeling like they are symbols of historic racism and white supremacy that overshadow them or that look down on them as they go about trying to, you know, better themselves or go about their day and their life. And so, you know, we have here locally in our own community and nationwide and worldwide identified how many, you know, of these monuments and statues there are. And there are a lot of them, and there are a lot that are being torn down as we speak or being removed. And I think that, you know, how can we reconcile this, right? How do we somehow turn this around, or what can we do, right? And I think that if it's about the history, then you put those statues in a museum, that you put those statues somewhere where they can be kept in historical context. Context matters, that they're not being revered or put on high or celebrated in a setting that doesn't celebrate everyone, right? So that, I think that, that's square number one. Number two, I think that you replace those statues and names with names of people that do represent the best of us and our story and our diversity and people that represent the new ideal and ideology of what we want to be. Because there are people that you can go back to that even in those times represented the best of the ideals of what we want to be, you know? And so renaming a Robert E. Lee High School after John Lewis sounds like a great idea, you know, what they did in Virginia. Finding great Tar Heels that we can name some of these buildings after, you know, and even if you don't want them all to be black, you know, they can be named after people that were forward thinkers, because we've had some. It's, you know, a lot of people, we hang our liberal, you know, our hat on UNC being here and that we are open-minded and forward thinking. And there's a part, like I said, there's a part of our history that is there that collides with where we say we are. And so I'm glad that this moment has come about where we're doing something to change these things. Our university and our community, I think, prides itself on diversity, openness, inclusion, you know, and this type of conversation. So I'm proud of the fact that there are things changing now. It took some casualties of people's jobs and people being locked up and protesting, but that is also who we are. And I'm glad to say that when we feel something isn't right, that we speak up and say something about it. And that's why we have this show. And I'm proud of those kids on campus that continued to make noise until they got the change that they wanted to see. So some of us grown folks can continue to learn from these kids. All right. I appreciate everybody for checking in, y'all. You know, it's just time for these things to go. And if anybody wants to give me an email, you can hit us up at insidevoices@wchl.com. And yeah, check back in with us next week. Every Sunday at 2:30, we have this ongoing conversation about race, social justice, and equality, what we can do to make it better, y'all. I'm your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. This has been another issue. This has been another episode of Inside Voices on 97.9 The Hill in Chapelboro. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. Catch this episode and more by visiting our on-demand page at chapelboro.com.